Welcome to our Blue Papers podcast edition. Blue Papers are our version of white papers here at 4th & Print. They cover a wide range of business topics, all with an aim to help your organization succeed. This is episode number 176, Post-Demographic Consumerism. This episode is presented by 4th & Print Incorporated customer service manager, Brandon Manthey.
Beyond demographic segmentation, the changing face of consumerism. Consumers, of late, haven't been acting as they should. It used to be that we could segment people into a specific age group, gender, or socioeconomic status, and be able to tell with some amount of certainty how they would act, what they would like, and what they would buy. Due to a variety of factors, those days were behind us. Instead, consumers are misbehaving, buying products and sharing experiences that would traditionally have been out of their norm. The meaning behind words like demographics, generations, and stereotypes is now blurred because the lines that once defined them are also blurred. Trendwatching.com calls the movement post-demographic consumerism. In a comprehensive report it issued fall 2014, Trendwatching.com pointed to data that drives home the new face of consumerism. Here are three examples. Number one, the United Kingdom has more gamers over age 44 than under 18, and most gamers are women. Number two, the number of Twitter users between the ages of 55 and 64 grew 79%, making it the fastest growing segment between 2012 and 2013. And number three, the top 1,000 favorite music artists for 60-year-olds have a 40% overlap with the top 1,000 favorite music artists for 13-year-olds. This podcast will help define how traditional consumer demographics aren't as reliable a segment as they once were, why the trend came to be, and what marketers and entrepreneurs need to do to reach the right customers in the age of post-demographic consumerism. Let's get started by answering, what is happening to consumers? If you were to visualize a segment of all people between the ages of 55 and 64 of a certain ethnicity in a given mid-sized American city, the pool of people would be rather large. They would look at each other and agree on commonalities. They were raised during a period of similar world events and pop culture phenomena. Drill slightly deeper, and you would likely find the pool includes both parents and grandparents of preteens. As you get to the core, you may find a woman who is employed full-time, climbs mountains on vacation, and has just learned computer coding as a hobby. She enjoys chatting with a recent retiree who volunteers regularly and watches his grandchildren once a week. The fact that these two people share three demographic traits, age, race, and geography, yet act so differently, puts marketers who rely heavily on traditional segmenting at a disadvantage. Startup investor Rene DiResta calls it the spray-and-pray approach, whereby marketers douse a large group of seemingly similar people with the same marketing messages, hoping a certain percentage of them will answer the call. Years ago, the approach was risky at best. Today, it simply doesn't work. Today's consumers, whether they are keenly aware of it or not, fight traditional molds. In a blog about demographic-focused marketing demise, Tracy and Paul Gordon of the marketing cloud platform Bubblebox say consumers refuse to be part of a herd. Consumers no longer fit into predetermined segments because they want to act, feel, and buy based on their own likes and dislikes rather than on those of their generational or demographic counterparts. In short, consumers are no longer looking to each other to determine how to act and are instead looking inward, buying products and having experiences that speak to themselves as individuals. In that way, consumers are acting uniquely and expecting to be treated as such with personalized marketing and services. Why is this happening? Trendwatching.com cites four primary reasons why consumers are breaking out of the mold: access, permission, ability, and desire. Let's look further into these factors. We'll start with access. Technology has opened up our world. As consumers, we have greater knowledge of brands and ability to purchase online from the comfort of our home. The web has given us equal opportunity to know the latest trends in technology, food, and fashion. And consumers of varying demographics buy from famous brands like Apple and Amazon, creating a shared familiarity. In this way, experiences are becoming more universal, literally in all parts of the globe, rather than segmented. Next is permission. We still see political divisions of conservatism and liberalism, but overall, our society has shed many past beliefs and societal norms. We have given dad permission to stay home with the kids and let mom earn a paycheck. We have redefined what it means to be a family from the traditional father, mother, and biological children to families as varied as one can now imagine. This shifting belief system now makes it difficult to define generations. We once agreed that generations gave birth to their successors or a new generation. Today, Generation Z, who follows millennials, could be the children of a millennial or a Gen Xer. Because of this, generations are sharing ideas rather than battling to understand differing ideals, and most of society provides the freedom to live as one would like. Next is ability. Technology, especially through social media, not only gives access, but ability to identify with brands and research products. Even if we do not or cannot buy, our personality and tastes show through in the brands, products, and services we connect with socially. And as consumers age, they hold on to their interests rather than aging out like generations before them. And finally is desire. Status was once measured in money and material goods. Today it is measured in ways that are available to all: experience, health, sustainability, and ethics. Because of this, older generations no longer have something, namely wealth and possessions, that younger generations want. This leaves a more equal playing field for all consumers. If you are not yet convinced that marketing to a demographic alone may be a waste of resources, consider this demographic example. Two men from the United Kingdom, born in 1948, who are both wealthy, have been married twice, have two children, and own dogs. Marketers may instantly think of products these men would buy and exactly how to speak to them, until they learn that not only do the men's similarities stop there, the men's differences outshine their similarities. The men are Prince Charles and Ozzy Osbourne. Demographics often are misleading, and as consumers, we've morphed from being part of a herd to being a member of a tribe. These relatively smaller groups are blind to age, race, or income level. They gather, metaphorically, around similar experiences, favorite brands, and people who share their passions. Tribes are defined by the following. 1, members are engaged in the tribe's activity. They don't just show up. 2, membership is voluntary. 3, people aren't converted. They actively seek out tribes to join. 4, they're forward-facing, not isolated. 5, members are evangelists of their shared experience. 6, members do what they want, not what the leader wants, but sub-tribes are waiting to be led. 7, members likely belong to many tribes. And 8, every tribe and every tribe leader is different. So how do marketers or business owners find and speak to these tribes? Let's take a look at one tribe and extrapolate on what defines them. Middle-aged men who not only enjoy bike riding, but are so involved in the sport, they log hundreds of miles on expensive bikes while donned in Lycra. Without knowing more about individual members, what can we infer about them? They likely have disposable income, are health conscious, and care about their physical appearance, have spare time in which to ride, talk about bike technology and gadgets, map out rides, and talk on social media about their experiences. This tribe exists. Are you able to talk with them? If you sell fitness gear, the answer is an easy yes. What if you sell plumbing fixtures? The answer is still yes. You may just have to dig a little deeper for a connection. Do you sell fixtures that could be used to easily wash off a muddy bike or massage sore muscles? Once you fully define members of the tribe, you'll be able to characterize their needs. That's when you can begin to tell them your story and strengthen your relationship. If you do it right and do it well, tribes will begin to talk about you. Now that you know more about tribes, let's consider other ways to find them and market beyond demographics. Try one or more of these 8 tips. 1, reduce the scope of your marketing to hone in on specific interests. Instead of marketing to people who like cars, market to the person who wants a rugged vehicle to transport outdoor equipment and a dog. 2, market to life stages. Milestones will always be a part of life. Consumers will get new jobs, get married, have a baby, or care for an aging parent. mark it to the milestone rather than the age at which it takes place. Number 3, reconsider your brand heritage. Has your brand success relied almost exclusively on the purchase by a certain demographic? If so, you may need to break out of that mold. Instead, market around values like freedom, creativity, passion, independence, and individualism. Number 4, develop buyer personas and market to them. Personas are a representation of your ideal customer, based on market research and data about existing customers. Your personas should be defined by age, gender, financial status, education, and interests. Personas are also defined by how your ideal customer interacts with you. What pages do they visit on your website? Do they browse certain products? On which social platforms and devices do they interact with you? Number 5, use real-time data to personalize the customer experience. Remember that today's consumers expect to be treated like individuals, not like the rest of the herd. Use website clicks, transactions, and forms to create individualized emails, real-time ad banners, or push notifications. Number 6, create a journey by telling a story across a variety of channels. Individualize the story by developing an email drip campaign based on certain behaviors. Or engage with customers who are talking about you on social media platforms. Number 7, build a community of influencers. Today, people are the media. They rely on each other to review and recommend products and services. Find your advocates and help them become influencers. And number 8, if you're going to launch a marketing campaign, measure often, and then ensure you're agile enough to refine the timing of your content and its place across devices and channels. Of course, some situations and industries still rely on demographics. A Data Science Central article offers 3 situations in which demographics still matter. Number 1, the biology of our bodies. While age no longer means consumers slow down physically, the fact remains that older consumers will pay more for health insurance, as one example. An increase in health insurance costs means less disposable income to spend on certain brands. Are there other examples of how aging affects consumers that can also affect your brand? Number 2, the level of formal education and what we learn informally throughout life affect what consumers observe and how they act. This can lead to greater understanding among members of groups formed by an education demographic. And number 3, our culture or heritage, for instance, where we are born and raised, inform us and shape our views, thus affecting the type of products we buy. Those who have studied the trend of post-demographic consumerism offer some silver linings. First, consumer tribes are smaller, and if you find them, the chance is higher that your marketing will accurately reach your target. Second, demographics are not completely dead. Marketing Automations argues that you should still collect demographic information on your customers, just take care in when you use it. According to its blog on post-demographic consumerism, demographic data doesn't become irrelevant. The trend is just about how customers want to perceive themselves. You should still collect them, but carefully choose situations when you use them.
Thanks for listening to this podcast on post-demographic consumerism. As always, keep on the lookout for future podcasts and make sure to check out a 4imprint podcast archive at 4imprint.com/bluepapers.